I'd like now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Charles Koenig. He is on the executive committee of the organization We Are People Here, which is presenting a town hall forum tonight called Foreclosure. The banks don't win unless we let them. It's at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation here in Santa Fe tomorrow at 6:30 in the evening. And we're also joined by Chris Clemens, who is a builder and local homeowner facing and fighting foreclosure. Welcome, gentlemen, to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks for having us, Mary Charlotte.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. Now, my simple-minded view of mortgage lending is the following. You go to a bank, you borrow a bunch of money, you sign a contract, you pay it back month by month according to the payment schedule that they give you. If you pay a little extra, your mortgage ends early, and if you don't pay it, if you stop paying, then the bank reclaims the house because they actually own it until you finish paying for it. What am I missing? What's wrong with that picture?
Well, the banks lend a percent of the fair market value, and as we saw in the collapse in 08, the fair market value on these residences frequently dropped below the mortgage balance.
And that's what's called underwater.
Yeah. And the interest rates on a lot of these mortgages, Chris, they increased at the end of a three-year fixed payment period. And so the interest rate's going up. The principal balance is reducing ever so slightly. But the house is worth a lot less than the mortgage balance. And then people lost their jobs and were unable to continue to make their mortgage payments.
The other thing that is being missed there is that what you described is the kind of old banking model that we grew up with.
Right.
Where, you know, you went to your local bank and you borrowed money from them. Beginning in, around 1998 or so, that all changed when the large banks, the large lenders like Wells Fargo, Bank of America, et cetera, started engaging large scale in the securitization of mortgages business.
That means what exactly?
Well, actually, it means taking other people's money and loaning it instead of the bank's own money. The banks basically used money that was generated by large hedge funds, pension funds, and so on from Wall Street. And they took that money and loaned it to homeowners, and they took a percentage for doing that. So essentially, the model changed from banks lending their own money to lending money that was owned by other people.
Oh, okay.
And that's what led to kind of the rampant abuse of underwriting, where banks used to, previously when you went to get a loan, it was difficult because they really scrutinized who they were lending money to. As soon as they started lending other people's money, they no longer did that. They lent money to anybody and everybody and actually went and harvested borrowers.
Harvested borrowers.
Yeah.
That means
they went out and sought borrowers that they could lend money to.
And that led to things like, in certain cities, reverse redlining, where they would go into neighborhoods where there were low-income people and just basically push mortgages on them, whereas 50 years earlier, those people would have been redlined out of getting a mortgage even if they could have afforded one.
Absolutely. That's exactly what happened, and it created an artificial bubble in the housing market that was doomed to collapse. And it was actually a business plan. The people that started these things knew that at some point there would be a collapse. And they have taken advantage of that and now are taking people's homes. They made profits on the upfront side when they, lent other people's money. Now they're taking profits on the other end when they're foreclosing on people's homes.
Is it in those folks' interest to actually own a bunch of properties that are worth so little? I mean, is that what they wanted? They wanted to basically go into the real estate business?
Well, you could look at it that way. There are a lot of other things involved. For instance, FDIC insurance and counterparty insurance that actually guaranteed the principal of these loans. So a bank might go in and let's say there's a house that has a mortgage of $500,000, but it's only worth $300,000. They can sell it at a foreclosure sale for $300,000, and the FDIC or some other counterparty makes up the difference. So they actually recoup almost all of the principal that they lent out. And, you know, it was government and FDIC guarantees of loans that actually made this a viable business plan.
Now, were there at some point safeguards against that kind of thing?
Yeah, there were safeguards. There were rating agencies that rated the quality of these bonds that were, you know, the loans made up these bonds. However, the ratings agencies rated everything AAA, regardless of whether they were piles of garbage, which many of these things were. You know, the ratings agencies are paid by the people that they rate. And if they didn't rate things AAA, then the banks wouldn't use them. So to get business, they, you know, rated everything AAA.
So basically, it basically became an issue of the system completely falling apart and not having any actual checks and balances.
Exactly. And, you know, the federal government, whose regulators were supposed to oversee this, looked the other way. A lot of those people ended up going from the federal government job to a private industry job. So there was kind of quasi-bribery involved.
So we're talking about foreclosures, and let's look specifically at New Mexico. What does this picture, I mean, you're talking about a picture that we've been looking at for the last 4 or 5 years on a national level. What are we seeing here in the state?
Well, we saw a slight increase in foreclosures in the last month over the previous month. I think delinquencies and foreclosures in New Mexico are running around 10%. That includes the delinquencies and the actual foreclosures. New Mexico is frequently the one of the last states to enter recessions and one of the last states to come out of recessions. So those foreclosures are still coming to market. My brother purchased a foreclosure moving out here from Southern Maryland and bought a house that had peaked at $350,000. I think he paid $140,000 for it and put $20,000 into a new roof. And so these foreclosures in New Mexico are having a depressing effect on real estate values.
I guess what I'm asking is, to what extent have all these unscrupulous banking practices affected New Mexicans, New Mexico being one of the poorest states in the country?
Well, I think the economy's had a lot to do with this. We're not creating enough jobs, and the employment base is shrinking from people not being able to get good jobs. The jobs they get are lower paid jobs, retail jobs, and that affects their ability to continue their mortgage payments.
I'll just interject. I think that the foreclosure crisis in general is, you know, putting thousands of New Mexicans out on the streets every month. And it's, you know, it's through people's no fault of their own. When the real estate market drops in half and basically loses 50% of its value, and, you know, most people have mortgages in the 70 to 80% range.
What does that mean, 70 to 80%?
Well, that means if they borrow 70 to 80% of the value of the house when they buy it.
Right.
So if a house is worth $200,000 and the value suddenly drops to $100,000 and their mortgage is $150,000 and they've lost their job, like Charles has indicated, they simply can't pay it back.
Right.
And so they're out on the street, and that's happening all over the state at an alarming rate. New Mexico is a judicial state, which means the banks have to take somebody to court in order to get their house. And that's fortunate, because in states that are non-judicial, which means there's no court action is required, the foreclosure rates are much higher. And New Mexicans actually do have good opportunities to protect themselves and to keep their homes.
Well, let's talk about that. Are the laws that protect homeowners, are they federal laws? Are they state by state?
They're both. The laws, you know, there are federal laws against predatory lending and, you know, the TILA laws, Truth in Lending Act laws. Those are federal laws. The foreclosure laws are state laws. There are statutes that govern the rights of banks to foreclose on properties in order to satisfy a mortgage. When the banks perpetrated these actions, they missed a lot of the rules that are put in place to protect people. Had they followed them, they wouldn't have been able to do what they did, which is to produce something on the order of $60 million mortgages in a very short period of time. So they didn't follow the requirements of the law in making these loans, transferring these loans to the hedge funds on Wall Street that provided the money. And so that's their weak point.
Now, can consumers, can homeowners, if they know that, take advantage of it?
Yes, lenders have weaknesses. They use secrecy, shame, obfuscation, and the loan modification process. People try to get their loans modified with their lender to reduce principal and or reduce interest rates. And they end up applying several times. The documentation that they've submitted gets transferred from clerk to clerk. And the banks use this obfuscation to delay the ability of the homeowner to get their loan modified. So banks have weaknesses in their practices and in their documentation, as Chris mentioned. Attendees to our foreclosure meeting tomorrow night can learn how to use these soft spots in court. As Chris mentioned, New Mexico is a judicial foreclosure state, which means that a judge has to rule on the validity of the foreclosure, as opposed to an administrative foreclosure state where an administrative person can rule on the legitimacy of foreclosure. So I would encourage folks to attend our forum, our town hall tomorrow night, meet with our panel of experts, and learn how to use these soft spots to their advantage.
If somebody forecloses, a bank forecloses on a homeowner, and the bank has not followed the law, and it's also true that the homeowner has not made his or her payments, how does the court decide?
Well, I think the judges look at that very carefully, and they're beginning to understand that the homeowner has an emotional as well as financial investment in that home. An example would be someone buying a $700,000 home and putting $200,000 down and another $100,000 or $200,000 into improvements. And then the value of the home drops so low that they've essentially lost their equity. But that equity's been supplied by cold hard cash by the homeowner, and the homeowner has this vested interest in the property. Judges are beginning to understand that if the plaintiff, the lender in a foreclosure proceeding, can't provide documentation that ensures that they have a 100% interest in foreclosing, then the judges at our district court level are starting to rule in favor of the homeowner.
And what happens then?
The debt's forgiven, and the homeowner's allowed to stay in their home. Now, we haven't had an appellate ruling in New Mexico, but we've had appellate rulings in other states in the country that have upheld the right of the homeowner to remain in their property.
The debt's forgiven, so if you owed $250,000, you own the house free and clear?
Correct, right.
You know, the question isn't so much did the homeowner make his payments, because if the homeowner had made his payments, it wouldn't be there. The question the court needs to look at, and does look at, is the party that's attempting to foreclose the party that actually has the right to do so.
Now, don't they have to actually hold up the note?
I mean, it does seem
like there is paper involved.
The judge will ask, where's the debt instrument? Where's the note supported by a deed of trust that gives you the right to foreclose on this property? And the lender's attorney will say, well, we have the note and deed of trust. And the judge says, well, where is it? And the attorney will say, well, we don't have it with us.
So go home and get it, or go to the bank and get it.
Yeah.
And then they either show up with it or don't. I mean, there was this famous case that was featured on the Colbert Report where somebody was foreclosed on who owned their house free and clear and, in fact, had paid cash for it. And they had to, they basically had to still fight the foreclosure, and no lawyer wanted to take the case. And they finally got the sheriff to go and start repossessing Bank of America's tables and chairs. And it was kind of a media circus. But it seems like, again, to a kind of person who's not involved, who's watching it, it seems so simple. If you don't produce the note, if you don't produce the debt note, how do you even have a case?
Right. And not only do you need to produce the note and deed of trust, but you need to establish conclusively that you, the lender, have a 100% interest in this property, and therefore the right to disclose. I think Chris's wife, Lonnie, made an interesting point a few minutes ago. There is a registrar in the state of Massachusetts, John O'Brien. He's in Essex County. And he has asked all the banks that are filing foreclosure documents to sign a statement that he has developed that pledges that there's been no fraud in the documents that they are supplying. And this one-page statement has resulted in none of the lenders supplying that statement. None. So O'Brien's working with registrars around the country to help them develop this this one-page document that asks the lenders to pledge that there's been no fraud or deception in their documentation.
If they sign that and it turns out not to be true, what happens to them?
Severe penalties.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, we're talking about the town hall forum, which is happening tomorrow, called Foreclosure: The Banks Don't Win Unless We Let Them. Chris Clemens, you are living this whole drama personally.
Right.
So what happened to you, and what process are you undergoing?
Well, what happened to us is a similar thing that happened to millions of people. We were going about our business as usual. We were builders here and real estate developers for over 30 years. And beginning in about 2007, our work began to dry up. And in 2008, we woke up one morning and, our property values of the real estate we owned, which was most of our life savings, was in free fall. That was in 2008, and we spent the next 2 years trying to divest ourselves of some of our property, and we were unable to do it because we couldn't sell it. We used up our savings making all the payments, and we finally just ran out of money and couldn't continue making them. We felt like we played by the rules for many, many years, and we took out dozens of loans and paid them all back faithfully, but were caught in this situation not of our doing. And we were very fortunate in that somebody showed up on our doorstep that helped us understand what had happened to us. And what had happened to us is we were set up. We were set up by a banking industry that knew they were going to cause a collapse in the real estate market, and lent money to people knowing that that was going to happen. And we also found out that we have ways and resources to protect ourselves, that the banks did not follow the law. And if we can help judges to understand how they didn't follow the law and what things they didn't do properly, and that they actually don't have any rights whatsoever to enforce this note and sell our house to pay the mortgage, that we can you know, prevail ourselves and help others to do the same.
And so where are you in that process?
We're in court with two purported lenders.
Purported lenders?
Purported creditors, I would say. I can tell you that neither of the parties that are trying to foreclose on us have the right to do so.
So they haven't produced the note and held it up in front of the judge?
Well, we haven't actually been in front of a judge yet. We're still in the kind of discovery process, in the administrative process, before we actually have a hearing. But, you know, we have done extensive research on our own mortgage loan situation and, you know, generally. And we can tell you with certainty that these parties trying to foreclose don't have the right to do so. And we believe that in the end we will convince the court of that.
Now, are there attorneys who have taken this on as a specialty? Because I would think there'd be so many clients if they did.
There are some, but it's just a handful. You know, part of the problem is that the law that governs these notes and the transfer of these notes is a very narrow portion of the law. It involves the Universal Commercial Code, or UCC. And there just are not many attorneys that have studied that or have practiced that. They're, you know, it's kind of the law of contract transactions. So for many attorneys, it's a whole new learning process, and there just aren't that many. There are a handful. A lot of the people making progress in this area are, you know, people that are pro se people, or, you know, people in other areas that have studied the problem. But we're getting people on board. I'd like to note that in the last month, there have been four actual foreclosure sales that have been reversed in the courts in New Mexico. Three in Bernalillo County and one in Colfax County. These are sales that have taken place where the court has actually vacated those sales. So there is progress being made.
Very interesting. So the people who bought them turned out not to have been able to, they had to go home and take their money back.
You know, I'm not sure if some of them, people had not moved out of their homes. Some of them they had. And I'm not sure what the status of people moving in and out are. But I do know that these are foreclosure sales that did take place, and now they're in question.
Very interesting.
Our keynote speaker Tuesday night, tomorrow night, is Robert Janes. He's a retired attorney, litigator, and his book will be available. He's an expert on the Uniform Commercial Code, which is that body of law that speaks to the foreclosure process in New Mexico.
And his book is called Fighting the Foreclosure Machine, The Homeowner's Hammer, which has gotten very good reviews on Amazon by the people who've bought it. And I guess a lot of people really are using it to their advantage and to bring their own interests forward.
It's a tremendous resource. It really is packed with information that is useful.
So it's tonight, the Town Hall Forum, Foreclosure, The Banks Don't Win Unless We Let Them, at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation on Barcelona Road. It's at 6:30. It's free and open to the public. Donations are, of course, accepted. For more information, you can go to the website wearepeoplehere.org. Charles Koenig is on the executive committee of We Are People Here, and Chris Clemens is a builder and homeowner. Thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte.